In the late 1970s, I stumbled upon an old, long-abandoned Oliver typewriter stored away in the back room of a typewriter repair shop where I worked in New York City. The Oliver was unlike anything I had ever seen before, an odd-shaped, green-colored monster with three rows of keys and type bars, U-shaped metal rods with type attached to them, positioned high above its carriage. It was old and deserving of greater appreciation than it was receiving there. It begged me to rescue it from that dark room and potentially the trash heap. So I packed the 30-pound orphan up and carried it home on the New York City subway during my standing room only rush hour commute. Once home, I began to explore this beauty a little further. The Oliver opened a door to a new world for me, one that ignited my curiosity about the early history of the typewriter. Before this point, I had never given even a thought to the early days of the typewriter industry. Back then, interest in old typewriters was almost non-existent, and most machines were disposed of at the end of their useful lives. Shortly after the Oliver discovery, I was leafing through the classified section of a monthly typewriter trade magazine when another vintage machine caught my eye. A Blickendurfer typewriter from the 1890s was being offered for sale. The Blickendurfer was a small manual typewriter that used a type element similar to the modern IBM Selectric typewriters that were popular in the 1970s. It was so much like the modern Selectric that I was repairing for a living back then, yet the 75 years that separated them make me curious about its history. There was so little information available on old typewriters at that time, so I acted on instinct, and I took a road trip across two states to purchase and pick up my prize. After all, I thought to myself, when would I ever see another one? On my return trip, a voice inside kept telling me not only had I just acquired something special, but also on that day, I had now become a collector. And so begins typewriters, iconic machines from the golden age of mechanical writing by Anthony Cacillo. It's forwarded, by the way, by Tom Hanks. Yes, the introduction has its awkward moments. It can sound a bit odd, especially if you weren't around in the 1970s or the 1980s when typewriters were in their heyday in the modern age. But the opening chapter alone, with its focus on the typewriter's history, is worth reading if you've ever pecked on the keys of one of those old typewriting machines. It surprised me to learn that the idea of the typewriter can be traced back to the early 1700s. But the first real manufacturing for general use typewriters took place over a century later. Obviously, folks were not in a hurry to implement these new wonder machines. It was in the 1870s when, as our author notes, the post-war American economy and the ever-evolving economies of the developed world across the globe were ready to take advantage of a machine that could reportedly, quote, type a letter at least twice as fast as it could be handwritten, end quote. Not a small increase in productivity, especially in those olden days. And this odd-looking machine would go on to become an essential tool of business, academic, school, and even home life for the next 8-plus decades. Who didn't have a typewriter at home? I think we had three at home, and we were not a particularly wealthy, well-off family, but somehow we ended up with three, and I know my parents certainly had them at work. Anyway, as we turn the pages, it is eerie. If you grew up with a typewriter, if you remember typewriters, if you use typewriters, if you have a typewriter, it's eerie to gaze at the full-color illustrations of these once ubiquitous communication machines. Because as far back as the 1880s, the classic typewriter look is quite evident. That rounded keyboard set out on several ascending levels, the platinum paper handling system that puts the typewriter's printed product in easy view of the typist, some sort of return lever to allow the user to return the typewriter's typing elements to the left margin of the paper. The early typewriters look a lot like the typewriters of, I was going to say today, of not that long ago. And indeed, the early typewriters were most often named after their mechanical inventor because they were still kind of a new item. They were still something new that folks were excited to learn about, to use. And so the Smith Corona typewriter, named after one of the founders of the Corona Typewriting Company, the Underwood typewriter, the Royal typewriter, the Edison mimeograph typewriter, the Imperial, the Bantam. The numbers and types of typewriters were huge back, especially back before World War II, before typewriters became the provenance of only a few major business producers. And of course, the text, from the chapter titles to the descriptions of the typewriters so clearly on view on each of the double spread pages and including Tom Hanks' introduction, they are all presented in typical typewriter type, albeit without those telltale skips, whiteout blobs, and other interferences for clear and easy reading. Whoever typed this was a master touch typist because there are no skips in the lines, there are no errors, there are no oddly conformed margins. It's just easy, easy reading. And that text, as I noted earlier, it's a collector's thought out, short, if interesting, statement of the original inventor of each of the particular machines which are portrayed, its purported improvements compared to other contemporary models, and each typewriter's distinctive details. Many of the typewriters on display were as much works of manufactured art as they were practical word processors, especially those made and sold before World War I. Even a casual purview of late 19th century typewriters, early 20th century, make it easy to see how the domestic arts and crafts movement of the early 20th century could develop from these practical works of, could develop in part from these practical works of art from the business world. There are oddities, to be sure, many more than we have time to talk about in our review here. But let's just mention a couple because they're oddities such that that actually became well known in some cases later on, and in some cases never really caught on for whatever reason. There's the Junior from 1907, weighed about 4 pounds, or I shouldn't say about 4 pounds because one the collector actually owns himself, so he knows, weighs 4 pounds. The author tells us this from his essay about the Junior typewriter. It's been said that good things come in small packages, and when it comes to typewriters, they don't come much smaller than a Junior. It arrived as one of the smallest packages ever seen for a full keyboard typewriter. It was advertised as a typewriter a businessman could place in their coat pocket and has been compared by some to a large harmonica. To leave our essay for just a moment, it looks very much to me like a hole puncher with typewriter tabs on it. And yet it had, the platen is there. You can roll your paper in. You can return the page to the left side so you can begin typing your new line. There's even a space bar. Not at the bottom of the letters, but actually at the top. It's a fascinating little machine, never really caught on, evidently. But in 1907, and probably the next few years afterwards, you certainly could have added one to your home, or more likely to your business. And then there was a change not that much later. This one actually from 1908. It was the standard folding typewriter, which we are told successfully addressed the need for a compact, portable typewriter, one that could be easily transported, yet remained practical enough to fill the gap between full-size office typewriters, those typewriters you never, ever wanted to move, and the inefficient, low-priced index machines. The standard folding was first patented in 1904, whose dream of a lightweight, portable typewriter remained his passion until his death in 1905. His efforts were carried on by his son, George, and a 1907 production on the machine began in a tiny loft in, yes, New York City. The standing folded is a portable type bar typewriter with a lightweight aluminum frame and a carriage that can be folded over the keyboard into a compact size. Once folded, it could then be placed in a case for easy transport. It's an interesting adaptation of what became a very clunky machine. Typewriters kind of became bigger and more powerful the longer they were around, kind of like the dinosaurs now that you think about it. Anyway, there are, as I said, many other examples of typewriters. Many of these are from the years before World War II started. But Of course, you gotta talk about electric typewriters before you conclude your book. And indeed we do. The first electric typewriter that our author tells us about that he has actually collected and has in his possession is from 1925, during the Roaring Twenties. I didn't realize it went back that far. It is a Remington Electric, weighed originally about 47, 48 pounds. And as our author tells us, the Remington Electric, again from 1925, ranks among the largest and heaviest typewriters ever manufactured. Once powered up and running, this motor-driven mechanism hums and vibrates. A rheostat at the rear allows the motor speed to be adjusted to control the speed of its operation and the impact of the type bars on the paper. The keyboard is electronically powered and includes operational features such as tab, backspace, spacebar, shift, and return. The first order of 2,500 motor-driven assemblies that Remington ordered from Northwest Electric were installed in their typewriters and sold quickly, but no additional orders were placed. So this first exciting typewriter with electricity from 1925, it was not until much later that that classic electric typewriter that so many of us drooled about owning, and perhaps some of us even actually had in an office or maybe an academic quarter somewhere, the IBM Selectric came out in, believe it or not, 1961. And as it is the king and, of course, queen of typewriters in its day, kind of the grand typewriter by which all preceding typewriters sometimes get measured. Although, if you are a you're a manual typist and you love manual typewriters, you have nothing to do with an IBM Selectric. Understand that. But if you are into electric typewriters, if you were into producing papers and projects, the IBM Selectric was truly a wonder to behold. Our author tells us it revolutionized typing by introducing a ball-shaped type element and cartridge ribbon that travels across the writing line while the paper is stationary. It has a sleek, space-age design with a smaller footprint than conventional typewriters. A responsive touch and typing speed of 15 characters per second makes the machine faster than any human can type, which of course raises the obvious question, why? Interchangeable type elements allow users to include multiple typefaces on a single typewritten page. Who doesn't remember changing out their typewriter balls so that you could get different type effects on the same page? The Selectric was an instant success, and demand quickly surpassed IBM's ability to fill orders. And yet, try to find a Selectric today that is still operating. If you have one and it still works, good on you. What a great typewriter in its day. This is very much the work of a collector, not a history buff. The text is replete with cliches, and our author frequently elides over the deeper reasons for changes in technology and business history. But still, for what we can still call a coffee table book, this one is pretty darn good. The typewriter today is a relic, or as our book will have it, an iconic machine from the golden age of mechanical writing. An icon or a relic that now show up in such unexpected places as a coworker's office. Perhaps they use it for envelopes, perhaps they use it for forms, or just for eye candy. In the children's room of the downtown Indianapolis Public Library, where they are part of a display titled, How We Used to Write Letters. Let's wrap up this stroll down a long and colorful memory lane, because some of these typewriters were really interesting, not only from a mechanical standpoint, but from the color and the designs that were impressed upon it, with the author's closing words in his introduction. What a great way, oddly enough, to conclude a review of this book that you're going to drool over. If you like typewriters, this is one you got to read. Our author concludes his introduction with these words. So many of us have a typewriter story to tell, whether we used the machines for papers in high school and college, or watched our grandparents type out letters on their cherished machines, stories that evoke fond memories of a much simpler time. In the pages that follow, the typewriter will tell its own remarkable story. It is a story that is well worth reading. It is a story that is well worth reading about. Typewriters by Anthony Cacillo, forwarded by Tom Hanks, and it's subtitled Iconic Machines from the Golden Age of Mechanical Writing. It's a great look at years past and maybe years even today. It's available at all of our fine local public libraries, including, of course, the West Lafayette Public Library.